The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, John Dixon Carr hosts an episode of Murder by Experts entitled Summer Heat. We'll also hear about the playful spirit on Incredible But True in a segment of the soap opera Rosemary from 1947. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the golden age of radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, The Playful Spirit on Incredible But True, in a segment of the soap opera Rosemary from 1947. Right now, John Dixon Carr hosts an episode of Murder by Experts entitled Summer Heat, as WMKY presents the golden age of radio.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr. Each evening at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery, which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. Tonight's guest expert is Mr. Hugh Pentecost, author of many memorable thrillers, who has selected a story by a young newcomer you'll do well to watch, Andrew Evans. Be very careful as you listen, for, as Mr. Pentecost says of this thriller, the story has not only a twist, but an unforeseen double twist, which takes one completely by surprise. And now we present Summer Heat. Look now at the old elm. The ivy-covered buildings on the campus of a small Midwestern university. It's a fine June afternoon when you hear laughter and the greetings of the reunion of the class of 36. 12 years have passed, but none of the members of the class seems much older to each other. There's the dark-haired Paul Baxter wandering rather strangely. There are two of his old friends, prosperous now, judged by their clothes, and boisterous in greeting.
Paul Baxter! You old rascal! It's sure good to see you again.
Hello, Steve. Bert, this is a surprise.
Why didn't you ever write to us, Paul? You had our addresses.
Why, sure. That's no way to treat old classmates. Just think, 12 years. Yeah. Oh, they sure have gone fast.
Too fast to suit me. Say, Paul, you've turned awful gray for only 33.
Well, he always did take things too seriously. I suppose by now, Paul, you're one of the biggest lawyers in the state, huh? How's Marcia?
Yeah, you were all set to marry her after graduation, remember?
Yes, and you were going to become her father's junior law partner. Oh, you sure had a sweet setup there.
Well, things worked out a little differently. You see, that party we had graduation night,
Do you remember it?
Remember it? How can we forget it?
Oh, that was a real blowout. And were you tight, Paul?
You know, that party sort of changed my whole life.
Changed your life? Well, how?
Well, I don't remember much about the party itself. I guess I had too many drinks. In fact, I don't remember anything until I woke up the next morning. I could hear old Trinity ringing. I awoke to find myself on the couch in my living room. It was noon, and the room was hot, stiflingly hot. I remembered I had a date with Marcia and her father at 1 o'clock. I got to my feet. My head ached. There were heat waves before my eyes. Feeling sick, I staggered toward my bedroom, and then I saw him. A man, asleep on my bed, his back to me. For a moment, I stood there, trying to remember if someone had come home from the party with me. But the night before was a total blank. I crossed to the bed, bent over, shook his shoulder. Hey, fella. Hey, it's noon. Wake up. Come on, wake up. As I shook him, he had flopped over and looked up at me with staring eyes. He was dead. And there was a knife in his chest. My hunting knife. I stood stunned, staring down at the body on my bed. The dead man was an utter stranger to me. He was neatly dressed in old clothes. And my knife was in his heart. I killed him. I couldn't remember when or how or why, but I'd killed him. Frantically, I tried to remember what had happened. Was he a panhandler? Someone I'd met on the street and drunkenly brought home with me? I didn't know. I couldn't remember. As I stood there, trying to get a grip on myself, I suddenly realized there was someone at the door. Instinctively, I walked into the living room and towards the door. Just as I was about to open it, I realized the danger of letting anyone into the apartment. I put my ear against the door and listened. I heard voices. Yours, Steve. And yours, Bert.
Hey, Paul, open up. We want to say goodbye.
Come on, Paul. Wake up, will you? We're leaving for California in 15 minutes.
I guess old Paul isn't in.
Yeah. I wonder how he felt when he woke up.
Boy, what a head he must have had.
Still, I'd sure hate to leave without saying goodbye.
Well, he has our California address. He can write to us. Come on, or we'll miss that train.
Then they were both gone, and I dared to breathe again. I tried to think calmly, figure out what to do. I knew I should call the police, but they might charge me with murder. And what defense could I offer? I thought of Marcia. The slightest scandal and everything would be off. Our marriage, my job, my future. I couldn't call the police. I couldn't call them and sacrifice everything I'd worked for. Somehow I had to get the body out of my apartment, get rid of it before it was found. Then it came to me. My car was in the basement, garage. The dumbwaiter in the kitchen led down to the basement. I could put the dead man in the dumbwaiter, lower him to the basement, get him in my car, and then...
Mr. Paul! Oh, Mr. Paul!
It was Jenny, the cleaning woman. She'd let herself in with a key. I hurried into the living room, closing the bedroom door behind me.
Oh, there you are. A fine time for a rising young lawyer to be getting up.
Oh, hello, Jenny. I guess I overslept. I was at a party last night.
A party, was it? Everyone on the campus is talking about it, and the complaints. Well, now step aside and let me into that bedroom. I got to start cleaning.
Jenny, can't you come back later and do the place?
No, I can't. Now get out of my way.
Jenny, wait. I don't want you to clean up yet.
Paul, what's wrong? Why are you blocking the door like that?
Well, the truth of the matter is, one of the boys had a bit too much last night, and he's in my bedroom sleeping it off.
Oh, well, get him out of there. Take him to a Turkish bath.
Turkish bath. Oh, yes, that's a good idea. Look, Jenny, just give me half an hour to get him dressed and out of here. Then you can come back and clean up.
A half hour, nothing. I'll give you exactly 5 minutes.
All right, Jenny, I'll have him out of here by then.
You'd better.
She was gone, and I had 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. I went into the bedroom and quickly went through the dead man's pockets. They were empty. There was no identification in them. The thin, pinched face told me he was a nobody, a derelict, someone who might never be missed. As I was about to lift him off the bed, the phone rang. A shrill ring filled the room. Hello?
Hello, darling.
Marcia.
How was your stag party last night? Did you miss me?
Miss you?
You sound as though you have a dreadful hangover.
Hangover? Oh, yes. Oh, excuse me a minute, Marcia. There's someone at the door. Yes?
I'll be coming in to clean your room in another minute, Paul.
Jenny.
So get your friend out of there.
Oh, yes, Jenny, yes. Just give me another minute and we'll be out of here. Marcia, I can't talk to you any longer. I'm in a hurry.
Then you haven't forgotten your appointment with Father and myself at 1 o'clock.
No. I may be a little late, but I'll be there.
Paul, you mustn't be late. I've told you over and over what a stickler Father is for punctuality. He can't stand people who are late for appointments. Well, you recall how furious he was when you didn't
show. I know, Marcia, but I...
You have 45 minutes to shave, shower, and dress. That's plenty of time. And, Paul, wear your gray flannel suit with the blue knitted tie and be sure you're there.
Yes, Marcia, yes, but I've got to hang up. Jenny will be coming back any minute that I...
Well, what if she is? Now, darling, you haven't forgotten what we discussed yesterday afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon?
Yes. Now, I know Father's brusque and inclined to bully people, but don't let it upset you. After all, it's our future he's...
Marcia, I can't talk any longer. I've got to hang up. Jenny will be back. I've only seconds left.
What in the world are you talking about? Now, when Father asks
Marcia, I've got to hang up. I've got to. Goodbye. I hung up the phone and wiped the sweat running down my face. It took only a moment to lift him off the bed, carry him into the kitchen, pull the dumbwaiter up and put his body into it. I closed the door to the dumbwaiter, ran out of the apartment and started down the stairs to the basement. I got down to the basement to find Ben, the janitor, leisurely pulling on the dumbwaiter rope. Ben! Oh, Ben.
Oh, hello, Paul. Yeah, but your car, you're after. It's there by the door, all washed like you asked.
Thanks, but Ben, stop a minute, will you? I want you to do something for me.
Sure, Paul, just as soon as I've emptied this dumbwaiter.
Will you stop blowing that dumbwaiter? Stop, you hear?
Hey, what's wrong with you? You're acting mighty strange.
I'm sorry, I shouted like that, Ben. It's just that there's a package up in my apartment that I'd like you to mail right away. There's a dollar in it for you.
All right. But there ain't no need to rush. Today's Sunday. The post office is closed.
Closed?
Sure. Say, what's the matter with you anyway? Must be the heat. Something awful heavy on this somewhere.
Ben, wait a minute. There's something else.
How's that?
Stop a minute, will you? How can I talk to you while you're lowering that dumbwaiter?
Well, go ahead. I can hear everything you're saying.
Let go of that rope. Let go, you hear?
Hey, you going crazy or something? I've half a mind to call a super and tell him what
no,
you...
No, don't do that. Ben, up in my apartment, there's a bottle.
Bottle?
Yes, I brought it home last night. It's half full. I wanted you to have it for cleaning the car.
Oh, thanks. I sure appreciate that, Paul. I'll go up and get it as soon as I've emptied this dumbwaiter. It's almost down now.
But Ben, Jenny just went in to clean. You know how she feels about drinking?
Jenny, jumping grasshoppers. Why didn't you say so? That woman will pour it all down the drain if I don't get there first.
As soon as Ben disappeared up the stairs, I pulled the dumbwaiter the rest of the way down, opened the door, and he fell into my arms. Slinging the body over my shoulder, I staggered with it to my car and swiftly dropped him on the floor in the back. It was an old touring car. The top was long since gone. To hide the body from view, I covered it with an old blanket. A moment later, I started a motor and rolled smoothly out of the basement and into the driveway. As I did, I heard Ben shouting to me from my window.
Oh, hey, Paul, wait a minute. I got something
I pretended not to hear Ben calling. Instead, I stepped on the gas. Almost proud of myself as I drove past the campus. I was in trouble, but I was thinking fast, as a good lawyer should. I'd already decided I'd have to get rid of him by dumping him into the river. As I came to Main Street, driving neither too fast nor too slow, I turned left toward the river. There was very little traffic, and I was just about to speed up when behind me I heard a whistle blowing. It was Dugan, the town's only traffic cop, and he was blowing for me to stop. There was nothing to do but pull over to the curb. As Dugan hurried up to me, I realized I'd driven through a red light. Hello, Dugan.
Never mind that hello, Dugan stuff. What's the matter, you colorblind?
I'm sorry, Dugan. I just didn't notice the light.
You just didn't notice the light. That's fine. I think you and me had better take a ride over to Justice Miller.
Oh, look, don't run me in, Dugan. It won't happen again.
That's what all you college cut-ups say. Next thing you know, you'll be telling me... What do you got there in the back? Underneath that blanket?
Under the blanket?
You heard me. What's under it?
Why, that's Roy Hamilton, one of my classmates.
Yeah, well, what's he lying on the floor under a blanket on a hot day like this for?
Last night at our farewell shindig, Roy had a few too many. He's still out. I'm taking him home.
Where does he live?
At Mrs. Randolph's boarding house.
What are you handing me? That's in the other direction.
Yes, yes, I know, but first I'm taking him to the Turkish bath on Elm Street.
Yeah, well, by the time you get him there, the poor guy will be dead. Ain't you got no sense?
What do you mean?
Look at the way you got the blanket over his head and in his heat, too. I better pull the blanket off his face so he can breathe.
No, no. I mean, I covered his face on purpose. Suppose Dean Richards or somebody saw Roy like this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But just the same, I better...
Constable, can I see you for a minute?
I'll be right with you, Jensen.
Johnson.
Where were we, Baxter? Oh, yeah, the guy in the back. He'll smother to death if we don't move the...
Roman, it's important. I've got to see you right away.
I'm coming. I won't run you in this time, Baxter, but from now on, stay awake when you're driving.
I will, Dugan.
And for Pete's sake, pull the blanket off that guy's head. Take it easy, Jensen. I'm coming.
As I stepped on the gas, I muttered a prayer of thanks for old Johnson, the janitor of the medical school building, who had called Dugan just as he was reaching for the blanket that covered my passenger. It was a few minutes after one as I drove out of town. I could picture Marcia's father fuming in my lateness. The sun was scorching in my open car as I drove along River Road, looking for a place to hide the body. I needed one where there were trees to hide me. The hours that followed were like a nightmare. The heat was stifling, and I could feel my hand shaking on the wheel from nervous tension. I drove and drove and drove, looking for a place to get rid of the body. But the whole countryside seemed to be swarming with people, families picnicking, Boy Scouts camping, kids in swimming, couples in parked cars. No matter where I turned, there was always someone in sight. Little spots danced before my eyes. Waves of faintness swept over me. My hand began to ache in my head, too. Unbearably, it was already long after 3. I was late for my date with Marcia and her father. That didn't matter. Nothing mattered but to get rid of the body in the back of the car. I had to get rid of it. I had to. I drove, mile after mile, turning from one road to another, searching endlessly for a safe place to stop. Then I realized I was running out of gas. I saw a gas station ahead, and I decided to stop there. It was a risk, but I had to take it.
Okay, mister. It's 5 gallons. Want me to check your oil?
No, no, thanks. How much?
It's $1.15.
Whew, boy, it's hot, isn't it?
Yes, it's hot, all right. Here you are.
That's 1.15 out of 5. Now get your change. Hey, this rear tire looks a little flat.
That's all right.
You want me to check it? Won't take but a minute.
It's all right, I tell you.
Okay, mister, just you say. Your rear door's open. I better shut that for you.
Leave that door alone.
Ah, but you don't want to drive along with your rear door open. That's funny. There's something in the car jamming it. I better have a...
Leave that door alone and get my change.
But you... All right, mister. Just as you say. I'll get your change.
He hurried into the station. I looked in the back of the car and saw what had kept the door from closing. It was a hand. His hand sticking out from under the blanket. The attendant had seen it. He would be phoning the police. I drove faster and faster. The police would be on the lookout for me now. My whole future depended on what I did in the next few minutes. And then it came to me. In one brief moment, it came to me. The perfect way to get rid of the body was so simple, so perfect, that I laughed aloud with relief. A half hour later, I was parked in an alley behind one of the university buildings. It was Sunday, and the place was deserted. Despite my fatigue and aching head, it took me but a moment to carry the body into the basement of the medical building and down the corridor to the basement room where the bodies for the dissecting classes were kept. Where does a wise man hide a leaf? In a forest. Where does a wise man hide a body? In the dissecting room. The room was big and cool and dimly lit. The far end was a long metal tank. I reached the tank and lowered him to the stone floor beside it. I had only to open the tank, slip him inside, and leave. I reached for the lid of the preserving tank and was about to open it when I heard a voice.
Hey! Hey, who's in there?
It was Johnson, the janitor. I quickly dropped behind the tank and waited, holding my breath.
I heard you. Stop hiding and come out. I know you're here. I just saw your car through the window. You better come out if you know what's good for you.
He'd seen my car. He knew I was in the room. But if I kept my head, there was a chance, just a chance. All right, Johnson. Here I am.
Baxter, eh? So it's you, is it? You're the one
Johnson,
who...
wait a minute. Let me explain.
Explain, huh? After last night, I'm not listening to any fancy stories. I'm the one who gets blamed when... What's that on the floor behind you there?
On the floor? What? Why, nothing, Johnson.
Do you think I'm blind or something? Step aside and let me see what... Why, it's a body.
Yes. It's a body.
So that's it. I thought you were trying to steal one. Instead, you were bringing it.
Yes, I was bringing it.
And just what were you going to do with that gentleman on the floor? Put him back in the tank with the rest?
Yes, that's right. I thought he might not be noticed.
As if I wouldn't have known.
Well, go on. Call the cops. Let's get it over with.
All right, Baxter. Of course, I don't have to call the cops. Nobody knows about this but you and me.
What? What do you mean?
Well, I was going to make a report, but this way there's no harm done, so I might be able to overlook the whole thing if I was persuaded properly.
You might overlook it?
That's right. You just leave this fella to me and there's no fuss because nobody's the wiser.
You'd do that? You'd keep your mouth shut?
I guess I could be persuaded to.
How much?
Suppose we say $50.
$50?
That isn't much, considering what would happen if I reported you.
Oh, no, it isn't $50. That's very cheap to help me cover up a murder.
Murder? More of your jokes. I'm not talking about murder. I'm talking about putting number 37 here back in his proper place.
Number 37?
Yes, 37. He just came in yesterday from the county poor farm, and last night he disappeared, stolen by you and your drunken friends, and dressed up for a joke. Well, I don't like jokes like that. I drove downtown a while back to tell Dugan the constable about it, but... I didn't tell him anything. It would mean trouble for me for being asleep on the job.
Number 37. He was stolen from here last night.
Aye, that's what I said. As long as you've brought him back, there's no harm done. That's why I'm willing to keep it quiet.
Then I didn't kill him. It was just a joke somebody played on me. Just a practical joke.
Here. What's wrong with you?
It's a joke. It's a very good joke on me. This whole afternoon, driving in the heat, trying to get rid of him, it was just a joke.
A joke!
For goodness sakes, he's fainted.
Well, that's the story of what happened the day after our graduation party 12 years ago. When I came to, I was in the college hospital. I'd been unconscious a week. They said it was just a slight breakdown brought on by sunstroke. I was all right after a while, but somehow I wasn't interested in law anymore. Marcia and I didn't get married, and I didn't become her father's junior law partner.
Good Lord, Paul. We never knew any of this.
Gosh, Paul, I can't tell you how sorry I am. We never dreamed our gag would turn out like that.
Your gag?
Why, sure. See, after the party broke up that night, we were feeling pretty high, and... well, it was a crazy idea, but we thought it would be funny to steal a cadaver from the medical college and leave it in your room with your knife in it.
Then it was you? The two of you?
Well, yes, Paul. Gosh, I feel terrible about this, but... well, that day we left, we came up to your apartment to tell you about a little joke, only you weren't in.
We had to rush for our train, but we phoned from the station. Ben, the janitor, answered, and we told him to explain about the cadaver.
I heard him calling, but I didn't stop.
Paul, will you ever be able to forgive us for what happened?
Forgive you? Forgive you? No! No, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you, do you hear? Kill you!
Hey, wait a minute.
No! Get him!
Bert! Bert, help me!
Paul! Paul, let him go!
He's choking me! Help me!
I kill you! I kill you!
Here he is, men. Grab him. Quick, grab him.
Let go of me. Let go.
Quick, now. Get him back to the hospital.
I'll kill him.
Take him out.
I'll kill him. I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
Now, you hurt, mister?
No, I'm all right. But you came just in time. He was trying to kill me.
Why, he sure was. He just went crazy.
Well, I'm sure sorry this happened. You see, he slipped away from the hospital this afternoon. We figured he'd head this way.
The hospital?
Yes. Poor fellow had a bad breakdown just after he graduated 12 years ago. He's been locked up ever since.
Locked up?
Yeah. He's always been perfectly harmless, though. He just went around all the time looking for a place to hide something. This is the first time he ever got violent. I can't figure out what came over him.
And so the curtain falls on Summer Heat, which was chosen by guest expert Hugh Pentecost, whose latest thriller, Where the Snow Was Red, will be published next month. We welcome your comments on tonight's story. All letters should be addressed to Murder by Experts, care of Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18, New York. Next week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you the story of a woman who pitted her wits against death. A story selected for your approval by Brett Halliday, creator of the rough, tough detective known as Mike Shane. Until then, this is your host, John Dixon Carr, saying good night.
In our cast were Lawson Zerbe, Bryna Rayburn, Ian Martin, Cameron Andrews, Bill Zuckert, and Frank Behrens. Summer Heat by Andrew Evans was adapted for radio by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. Original music was composed by Richard LePage. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. All characters in this story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. Phil Tonkin speaking. This is the world's largest network, serving more than 500 radio stations, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY in an episode of Murder by Experts, hosted by John Dixon Carr. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, a segment of the soap opera Rosemary from 1947. But first, here's the story of the playful spirit on Incredible But True, as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The poltergeist, or playful spirit, has been for centuries a familiar figure in the literature of psychical research. No one has ever seen him, no one has ever proved that he really exists. And while sophisticated minds of the 20th century may scoff at the idea of an invisible imp who maliciously moves furniture and shatters crockery, there are literally thousands of cases of such spontaneous physical phenomena which cannot be otherwise explained. There is, for example, the case of Mr. Playfair, the miller of Kent.
J.C. Playfair, owner of the furnace mill at Lamhurst, Kent, was a solid and practical man. Hence, when the hired man informed him, on a certain May morning in the year 1906, that a mysterious visitor had entered the stables during the night, Mr. Playfair was slightly annoyed.
Now, could anyone get in the stables? Every door's locked and bolted, and you and I have the only keys.
He didn't need a key, sir. It was one of the playful spirits. Some folks call him the poltergeist.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Scobley. How many times have I told you there are no...
I know, sir. But just the same, sir, I wish you'd come out to the stables and look for yourself.
And so Mr. Playfair, mumbling his disgust over the whole silly business, followed his hired hand out to the stables.
Good Lord, look at the horses. They've all been turned around in their stalls.
Aye, sir.
And the mare, she's gone.
Aye, sir.
Scobley, you've done this yourself. There isn't room to turn those horses around like that. They'd have to be led out of the stalls and led back in again through this door. And the door was bolted.
I know, sir. But I haven't so much as touched them.
Now, where's my mare? She couldn't possibly have got out. This is ridiculous, Cobbley. The whole thing's perfect.
Listen, sir.
Great Scott! What is it?
It's a barrel of lime, sir. Up in the loft. He pushed it downstairs. The spirit's still in here.
Spirit nothing. Nobody but a man could have moved that barrel. You up there! Come down! Come down, I say, or I'll come up and get you!
But no one came down. And when Mr. Playfair, stepping over the lime barrel at the foot of the stairs, climbed up to the loft, he found it quite empty. He was on his way back to the ground floor again, when suddenly...
The water butt, sir! Standing right there in the corner. He just turned it over.
The water butt? Good Lord, man. You and I together wouldn't have the strength to budge it.
Well, he did, sir. And that means he's right here in the room with us. And that means I'm getting out.
Cobbley, wait a moment. Come back. We're not leaving here till we've found my mare.
The A room is the only place left, and she couldn't very well be in there. Now, could she?
The hay room was a tiny space adjoining the stable, and the doorway to it was scarcely wide enough for a man, much less a horse, to squeeze through. Nevertheless, Mr. Playfair, having no place else to look, and ready by now to believe almost anything, did pull open the door and squint into the gloomy, malodorous room.
Gobbly, look! She is in here. Now, how on earth could she have gotten through this narrow little door?
Of course, any sensible and civilized person of the 20th century knows that there are no such creatures as poltergeists. And yet, the miller's horses were turned about in their stalls, and the lime barrel and the water butt were upset, and it was necessary to remove a partition to get the mare out of the hay room. And though we may dismiss, with a superior smile, the idea of a playful spirit, these remain facts. Facts incredible, but true.
Few products have been received with more universal satisfaction than Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, the floor polish that's saving so many hours of work every day for housewives everywhere. The reason for this satisfaction is the service Glow Coat gives, how easy it is to use, how beautiful it makes floors of all kinds, especially linoleum, how economical it is to use, and how it saves its cost many times over by making linoleum last so much longer. Glow Coat is called self-polishing because it really does polish itself. It shines while it dries, needs no rubbing or buffing at all. You simply apply Glow Coat with a cloth or long-handled Glow Coat applier, then go on about your other work. In 20 minutes, come back to find your floor gleaming with a hard, beautiful polish. Still, things are quickly wiped up with a damp cloth. And that's the Glow Coat story, which you can easily verify by trying it yourself on your own floors. Ask your dealer for Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat.
Wonderful ivory snow, so wonderful for dishwashing, so safe for hands, so fast in the dishpan. Wonderful is the word for ivory snow. Ivory Snow presents Rosemary, written by Elaine Carrington. Just listen to how little Janie recited when she was learning her tables, and maybe you'll find a lesson in it for you.
1 + 1 = 3.
Janie, you're both slow and wrong. You remind me of the ladies who use a mild bar soap for dishwashing. It's kind to their hands, but it's too slow, so it's wrong. Try again.
1 + 1 = 3.
Well, now you're fast enough, but you're still wrong. Just like the ladies who use their regular wash day soap for dishwashing. Those wash day soaps are granulated for quick sudsing, but they're often so strong they can make hands red and rough. That makes those wash day soaps wrong for dishwashing. Try again, Janie.
1 + 1 = 2.
Now, Janie, you're doubly right. And Ivory Snow, in its way, is doubly right, too. It's one soap both fast in the dishpan and safe for hands. Wonderful is the word for Ivory Snow. Because Ivory Snow is granulated in snowdrop form, it gives you speed and efficiency. And because it's ivory, mild and pure, it gives protection for hands, too. Yes, there's no other soap like Ivory Snow. The only soap both granulated for speed and ivory safe for hands. Now, Janie, tell me, what do dishwashing speed and safety for hands add up to?
I know. Wonderful Ivory Snow.
Right. Wonderful Ivory Snow. S-N-O-W. And now, Ivory Snow brings you Rosemary. Dr. Jim has called on his patient and now is driving Rosemary home. She has said very little since she got into the car, but she has had time to recover somewhat from the overwhelming grief she felt at the thought of Bill so far away from her At the thought of Bill arriving at the farmhouse. At the fact that she can't be near him. Now they have reached the Dawson home and Dr. Jim stops the car.
Don't you feel too bad, Rosemary, dear? And I mean about not getting a job at the Morning Star office.
Oh, I didn't really expect you, Dr. Jim. After all, you can't go away for a long time as I did and expect people to hold a job open for you. It wouldn't be fair. Besides, my time has been so uncertain. Mr. Selden never knew when I'd be there or when I wouldn't. I've been away for days at a time, and he's been wonderful. I know he'd take me back if he could.
Oh, I'm sure he would, dear. And we'll find something, Rosemary. I wish I had time to go inside with you and visit a while with your mother, but I've got sick folks to see, so I'm going to dump you out right here, dear.
Well, thanks for everything, Dr. Jim. Thanks more than I can say for waiting for me and bringing me back here. Gee, I felt so terribly sunk when I came back to the car.
Yes, well, this is a tough day for you, Rosemary, and don't you think I don't know it?
Yes, it is a tough day. Goodbye, Dr. Jim. We'll see you later, won't we?
You certainly will. I expect not a day will go by that you won't see something of me, as long as I feel about all of you and about your mother the way I do.
Oh, you're a darling, Dr. Jim. I only wish that you and mother could find happiness together.
Well, dear, Susie knows her own mind. She knows I'm around. And she knows, if she wants to, that all she's got to do is say the word. Well, in the meantime, take things easy, Rosemary, and I'll see what I can round up in the way of a job.
Oh, I don't want you to do that. That's really up to me.
Nonsense. It's up to all of us. Now, we want to keep you here. We don't want you to go away from Springdale. Now, be a good girl now and remember that things don't stand still, dear. They change all the time. Well, see you later.
Thanks, Dr. Jim. Goodbye.
Goodbye, dear.
Is that you, Rosemary?
Yes, Mother, it's me.
I'm just dusting the living room, dear. I thought I saw Dr. Jim's car through the window.
He did. He waited for me. He wouldn't let me come home alone. He's such a darling. He's one of the nicest people in the world, Mother. Do you know that?
Indeed, I do. Well, tell me, dear, what happened?
Nothing. Just exactly nothing. Mr. Selden has a girl, and he couldn't very well put her out of a job.
I'm sorry you're not going back there. I know you liked working for him.
Oh, I loved working for him. He's a wonderful man. He was just as nice as he could be about the fact that he couldn't take me on again. I know he would have if he possibly could. I know he would have made a place for me.
Of course. Well, sit down, dear. Oh, now let's talk a while.
Don't you want me to help you with the dusting?
No, dear. It's all finished now. Tell me, have you any plans?
I don't know. I don't know, Mother. I'm at such loose ends. I thought all of a sudden that it might be a good idea to go away from here and get a job anyplace but in Springdale.
I hope you don't do that.
So does Dr. Jim. He's so set on my staying here, he says he's going out to hunt a job for me. Isn't that sweet of him? I told him that was up to me, but he insisted on asking around and seeing what he can dig up. But, Mother, it's going to be so hard staying here. Here in this house where Bill and I...
I know, dear. I know it is. But I still think you ought to stay here with us, where we can look after you.
You sound as if you and Dr. Jim had been talking to each other. That's exactly what he said, too. Mother, why don't you marry him?
Marry him? I'm not going to marry anybody, Rosemary.
I know. I know you're not. I know you have an idea in the back of your mind of staying faithful to Father in hopes that he may be alive someplace. But, Mother, he's been gone for so long now, and you haven't heard a word from him.
No.
I think you might give Dr. Jim a break.
Did he send you in to plead his cause?
Oh, no, no, of course he didn't. But he did mention that he was always here if you wanted him, that you knew you only had to reach out your hand and he'd be there to help you. Oh, Mother, I'd love to see you happy with Dr. Jim. I'd love to see you married to him. Somehow, it would make me feel better about my own life if I knew you were his wife.
Darling, I think all those things we have to decide ourselves. I don't think our children, much as they love us, can decide them for us. And I think I'll have to do what I feel's right.
You mean you're never going to marry him? Never until Until you're certain that Father's dead?
I don't know, dear. I don't know how to answer that. I just feel that Jim is always here if I want him. He comes in every day. I see him. And he is a darling, but I don't know as I want to get married to anyone, even to Jim.
I wish he'd find another girl and make you jealous. You'd marry him quick enough then.
Maybe I would. And I don't believe I would, though. I think my job is right here with you and Patty until you're both settled.
Until I'm settled. That's very funny. I'm afraid I'll never be settled. I'm afraid I'll always be on your hands, Mother.
Well, who's that?
I'll go see.
Hello. It isn't too early to pay a call, is it?
Oh, no. I'm glad to see you. It isn't too early. I've been downtown with Dr. Jim trying to get my old job back, only to find that somebody else is filling it most satisfactorily.
Well, that's too bad in one way and good in another.
What's good about it?
Who is it, dear?
It's Brad Boyden, Mother.
Oh, Brad. It's nice to see you. Come in. Tell me, do you like your house?
Oh, I love my house, Mrs. Dawson. I love Springdale, and, well, I just couldn't be any happier. Especially as I see your Patty going to school every day. You know, I stand on the front porch and wave to her. She's a darling.
I'm afraid she's fallen under your spell, Brad. She talks about nothing but you.
Rosemary Dawson, I'm old enough to be her father, and she knows that.
Well, I think that's part of the enchantment. The fact that an old man like you is so nice to her.
No, I'm not that old. Tell me, what have you and your mother been doing?
Oh, we were just sitting here talking. I was just wondering what to do with my life.
Well, how about coming down to my house and cooking dinner for me tonight? Would you like to do that with your life?
Yes, I think I would. Yes, I think that would be nice, Brad. I'm feeling particularly low today.
I know, Rosemary. I realize that today is the day that Bill and his family are getting to Meadville. It's not going to be easy, any of it.
No, it isn't. It's going to be terribly hard not hearing from him.
I'm going to hear from him, Rosemary.
What? What did you say?
Well, Bill and I have arranged to write back and forth, and, well, I imagine he'll want to hear news of you, and I imagine that you'll want to hear news of him.
Oh, Brad, that's wonderful. No, it isn't either. Maybe we shouldn't give any news. Maybe we should leave him entirely alone to work this thing out. I don't know what's right. I don't know what to do.
Well, suppose you let me decide. If I want to write to Bill, you can't stop me now, can you?
No, I can't stop you, and I love you for doing it, Brad. I love you for trying to help me in every way. You're such a good friend.
That's what I wanted you to say, and that's what I want you to think. Say, Mrs. Dawson, how about your coming to dinner and presiding over the hearth?
No, indeed. I'm staying right here and cooking dinner for Patty and for Jim. You and Rosemary can manage the best way you can without me. And I think it's a good idea to get her out of the house tonight. I think this is going to be the hardest day of all for her to live through.
I'll just go along and do my marketing then. Without any advice from you, young lady. I'll see you later, Rosemary. I'll come by for you around 5. You can cook an early dinner for me. And I'll walk you home. How about that?
It sounds nice, Brad. Thanks for thinking of it. Thanks for thinking of it especially today.
Yes, Brad Boyden has made a special effort to divert Rosemary on the day he knows will be the hardest of all for her. The day that Bill arrives in Meadville with Audrey and Jessica. And now some mighty good advice to the women of our audience. Wonderful Ivory Snow.
I can play that too, Mr. O'Brien.
Well, let's hear you, Janie. Ah, good for you, Janie.
My music teacher didn't teach me that. I surprised Mama with it, and she laughed and said, "You're wonderful, Janie, just like Ivory Snow."
Now, if a lady's been using a Mile bar soap, or her regular wash day soap for dishes, she'll say Ivory Snow's wonderful. Because mild bar soaps, though safe for hands, slow up dishwashing. And wash day soaps, though granulated for quick sudsing, are often so strong they can make hands red and rough. But wonderful Ivory Snow is one soap both safe for hands and fast in the dishpan. Actually, it's the only soap both granulated in snowdrop form for speed and efficiency, and Ivory mild and pure for protection to hands. Ivory Snow's fast.
Ivory Snow's fast.
And safe for hands.
And safe for hands.
Smart girl. Yes, wonderful is the word for Ivory Snow. S-N-O-W. Ivory Snow invites you to listen again tomorrow to Rosemary, written by Elaine Carrington. Remember, Ivory Snow's wonderful for dishwashing. So kind to hands, so speedy. Yes, wonderful is the word for Ivory Snow. Watch your newspaper for higher prices dealers now pay for used fat. Fat is urgently needed to make many products you want.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There's a price tag on almost everything. Whether you drive a shiny new 1952 model or a pre-war jalopy, you have to pay the price. And when you're driving that car, remember that speed also has its price. The price tag on speed violations last year was 15,000 killed and 500,000 injured. This year, thousands of lives can be saved if you and millions of other motorists come to the sober realization that speed is the biggest killer on the highways and resolve to slow down before you or someone else pays the price that must be paid for it. You can do your part by keeping within speed limits. At all times, drive as though your life depends on it. It does.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY in a segment of the soap opera Rosemary, first broadcast on radio on May 7th, 1947. We also heard about the playful spirit on Incredible But True. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel. On WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.